Welcome to Parents' Perspective. I honestly don't know what we'll do this afternoon, Meg sighed. If it clears up, you can take Alexandra to the park, her mom suggested. Two-year-olds love going to the park. Well, it might be nice where you are, Meg countered glumly. But here, the rain's just letting up, and it's muggy and misty, and there are puddles everywhere. You probably can't remember, her mom began, but you and your brother love to go out after a rain. All that stomping in puddles and making mud pies. Yeah, Meg began. But what's the difference if we wait a day or two until it's nicer? I just cringe at the thought of all that mess. Children play indoors all the time, you know. They don't always have to be out. It's up to you, of course, her mom replied. But I remember those days when we had to be cooped up in the house, and you guys really relished getting out and running, jumping, and having all those outdoor experiences that you just couldn't have inside. I just can't imagine why any kid would enjoy heat and mud, Meg replied. Wish you lived closer. Then you could take her out. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about the effect of outdoor play on a child's development? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is an expert when it comes to children's need for outdoor play. Julia Berry is director of St. Columba's Nursery School in Washington, D.C., a preschool program which values outdoor play and includes children of all abilities. Ms. Berry has taught and written about science and the outdoors for children and their parents for more than two decades, and now consults with schools about developing playgrounds and outdoor spaces to promote nature, science, and active outdoor learning. Julia is the parent of three nearly grown children who learned to love the outdoors at St. Columba's. Her dog, Stella, comes to school with her every day and is a valued playground companion to all the St. Columba's children. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Julia.
Thanks. I'm just thrilled to be here.
What would you say is the biggest misconception about young children's outdoor play?
Well, I think it's that parents think it's just play, and that they don't see the bigger picture of what being outdoors does for children. Being outdoors gives children an opportunity for really expansive thought and action. It gives them a real appreciation of sights and sounds and smells and sensations that you don't find indoors. And it really gives them an opportunity to notice things. And by noticing, it begins to develop the skill of observation, but also taking in through different senses in their body the kinds of things that are important for their neurological development, their spiritual development, and their aesthetic development.
How would you characterize the difference between taking in all these sensory perceptions outdoors than indoors? Because in a house, you have lots of sensory perceptions, too. You have rugs, and you have walls, and you have sounds, and the telephone, and the doorbell, and all that.
One of the things that's really struck me about kids today is that they don't have a rich vocabulary of smell sensations. When you talk about, I often hire young teachers in their 20s about what they remember smelling as children. Typically, it's stuff like hand sanitizer and suntan lotion. Oh. It's not new mown grass. It's not the smell of wet leaves. Why? It's not the magnolia tree in the backyard. And, you know, those indoor olfactory things are, of course, you know, crayons and Play-Doh, and those great first day of school sort of memories are wonderful. But when you ask a child, where can you find a worm, and they look at you like, oh, I don't know, you know, let's dig a hole, but they don't know what kind of ground to dig in. It's a real gap in there, what I think is essential knowledge. If you don't understand with your body how to relate to the outdoors because you haven't been outdoors, it's limiting.
Are the sights and sounds and smells of indoors a little starker than what's outdoors? I'm thinking of scents of flowers, and you're talking about the smell of grass and all. All those things we're thinking about seem to be more subtle.
Well, more subtle and more varied. Okay. You know, every flower has a different scent. The lawn of your neighbor who has lots of onion grass is different from the lawn of your neighbor or the park where there's chamomile growing between the cracks. Kids can learn to navigate where they are in the neighborhood. I don't know if you ever played that blindfolded game where you would be blindfolded and your friend would lead you around in your neighborhood and you just smell and listen and see if you could tell where you were. It's a wonderful outdoor game, but it's based on that subtlety, just as you said, understanding with more than your vision where you are in the world, how much there is to be discerned if you have an opportunity to notice.
Somebody was also talking about depth perception, which is very different in the outdoors, and the use of your muscles and your body in space is different.
Well, one of the most important critical pieces of developing the skill of reading is having really flexible eyeballs and really strong ability to make the transition between near and far vision. And there's not any indoor space where your far vision is developed well. You have to be outdoors to practice that piece of your vision. And there was a fascinating piece on NPR last January about medical detective work, and the incidence of nearsightedness has gone up from the 40s to now by about 60%. And the statistics are that two parents who are nearsighted and wear glasses have a 60% chance of having their eighth grader in glasses by the time they reach that age of 11 or 12. But children that spend 14 hours a week or more outdoors have only a 20% as likely chance of being wearing glasses by the eighth grade.
What an extraordinary statistic.
And, yeah, you know, and they said, well, of course it's about near work. You know, they've always blamed it, you know, don't sit so close to the TV, don't read with the lights off, you know, hold the book farther away. But it is not related to just being indoors and doing that screen time or reading too much. They don't understand exactly what the mechanism, and there's more research being done, but it's linked to being outdoors.
What's the most important thing that parents need to know about outdoor playtime for youngsters?
That it's messy, that it should be messy. I worry about kids who have nannies at home whose responsibility it is to do the laundry and keep the house clean, and that's as important work as making sure that the children are well taken care of, because very often, you know, they're not allowed to take their shoes off, they're not allowed to get their socks dirty, they're not allowed to play in the mud, or as your story illustrated, you know, it's so much mess, I don't want to deal with having to wash the floor. Kids need to be outside really wallowing in whatever happens to be out there, whether it's the sandbox or, you know, climbing a tree or...
Or water.
Absolutely.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on the value of outdoor play in young children's development.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Julia Berry about the importance of outdoor play in young children's development. We've been hearing recently that there's a whole piece about children's exposure to germs that we're so nuts about, but it seems like we're now hearing that it's sort of a good thing. A little dirt is not a bad thing developmentally.
Well, certainly children who grow up in households with pets or children who grow up on farms have far, far, far fewer incidences of allergies and allergic reaction to everything that typical urban children tend to be allergic to. And yes, I do think we're neurotic about germs for the most part when, you know, kids need to be exposed to that. I often tell parents who are heartsick about their nursery schoolers coming home with colds or whatever, you know, if that means that their attendance at elementary school is going to be a lot more consistent. Kids need an opportunity to build their immune systems, and, you know, whether it's allergens or other things. Certainly hand washing is an important component of good outdoor play too, and we do a fair amount of that at school. But parents should not be so worried. One of the reasons I think that outdoor play is often limited is because of risk. Parents and caregivers feel like they need to protect their children from so much. And most playgrounds today are now designed with almost no risk to be had. And I don't know if you had the same experience that I did, but, you know, my mother sent me out for the day, and as long as I came back for dinner, she had no idea where I was and the kinds of risks that I was taking. Those are healthy things for children to learn how to do overprotecting them in the course of their play has consequences to the development of their intellectual skills and their ability to socialize.
What kinds of skills are especially fostered in an outdoor play setting?
Oh, well, gosh, good exercise, certainly. One of the things a really well-designed playground ought to do is, particularly, is to build upper body strength.
This
climbing and swinging and monkey bars, those are the things that we are not seeing on playgrounds. But again, to hark back to basic school skills, if your child can't sit upright in a chair and maintain good posture and use the left and the right arm independently, the helping hand on the paper, the writing hand with the writing implement, they won't be able to sit up at a desk. They won't be able to have good handwriting. If they don't have the opportunity to use their bodies for scanning the environment, seeing the horizon, they may not be able to scan a page.
What about a tree for climbing? We don't see this anymore.
No, it's too risky. People don't want their children in trees. Yeah, trees are a great resource, not only for climbing, but, you know, to study the bark and to see what kinds of creatures live on them and looking at the texture of leaves and understanding that trees have flowers and flowers make fruit, and fruit might be an acorn or an apple or something that you could mix into your sand soup to make something poisonous for your friend.
Are there ages or stages when outdoor play is especially valuable?
I think it begins at birth and ends at death. I mean, I think everyone needs to spend time outside, if not just to get their vitamin D every single day. Babies particularly enjoy being outdoors. It awakens and enlivens their senses. And again, that sensory experience of being laid on the grass as an infant, it just perks up their nervous system and makes them excited and happy. And it exercises those sensory skills. I know you've had Carol Kranowitz on this show. Carol Kranowitz wrote The Out of Sync Child for parents whose children have sensory processing disorder, and has a new book called Growing an In-Sync Child, which is for kids who are more typically developing. But it gives you the background you need to understand the senses other than sight, taste, hearing, and smell that need to be activated, the proprioceptive sense, which is your sense of pressure and experience of using your muscles and force, and your vestibular sense, which gives you an idea of how your body relates to gravity, swinging and spinning and tipping on a chair or being on a balance beam or being on a seesaw. And then there is the tactile sense, which is deeper than just touching and feeling, but is wired to your oral motor sense and your ability to use your skin to perceive things like the breeze. And all of those things, if a child has a rich sensory diet from the time they're babies, feeling the tickle of the breeze on the skin, the difference between grass and sand at the beach, it's wonderful for neurological growth. It gives you a rich set of memories to hark back on when you're thinking and associating what you learned as a baby or a toddler to later on. And it gives you a great store of memories for storytelling as well.
And it's not even necessarily conscious memories. It's memories that go into our whole perception of what the world is.
Right, like the Proust Madeleine, that smell that evokes a rich history or a time or place that is emotionally connected to your history. That's, I think, what early experiences for outdoors is for kids.
You're involved in school.
Right.
So when children are going outside for a play period, what are some important components of that play period besides your dog frolicking around with them?
When I look at playground design, and we were fortunate enough to build a new playground 4 years ago, a good quality outside setting will have big theaters for action, places where large groups of kids can play together and reenact dramatic scenes and really enrich their storytelling skills by saying, you know, you be the pirate and I'll be the princess and you be the other bad guys and you be the crocodile. But you also need places where children can have privacy, or at least some small places, quiet places, where children who are not as bold or who want to explore and think and ponder something can go and have relative peace and maybe just one friend or even alone where that contemplative outdoor experience can happen. You also need to have lots and lots and lots of what the literature calls loose parts. And by loose parts, they're talking about sand and water, of course. Good playgrounds have those. But also rocks and sticks and things that a well-manicured playground often lacks because, you know, the crew comes and cleans up. And leaf piles and other natural materials. At St. Columba, we have a full-time teacher whose job it is to set up the playground every morning with buckets and sands and bikes and trikes, and but often drapes things with fabrics or sets out ropes or ribbon sticks or things that will get kids running or building forts. So being prepared to go outside with a prop box, one that rotates in terms of its contents. Sometimes you might want to take out the bubbles, and sometimes you might want to take out paints. And certainly things that you do indoors on a regular basis, like watercolor painting or having a snack, they're even more wonderful if you do it outside.
Sometimes a lot of indoor kinds of experiences can be brought out perfectly harmlessly, like painting with shaving cream or...
Oh, like especially stuff like that that you might not want on your kitchen floor.
How can a specific environment add to or diminish a child's outdoor play experience? You're beginning to talk about this a little bit with the way your nursery school playground is set up.
Well, different kinds of play happen with different sorts of surfaces and different kinds of equipment. The kinds of things that go on a paved playground might need to involve balls or bikes or things with wheels because it's flat and open and it lends itself to running. And more natural playgrounds, of course, will lend themselves to nature and exploration and give you opportunities to really investigate what's there and think and theorize about where did this come from, what is this, why did the tree make it, or, you know, how come we found it here? So, yes, I think different kinds of play happen in different sorts of settings.
What about walking in the woods or gardening or needing to water the plants? Is that all appropriate for preschool children?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. One of the things we've really worked on the last 3 years is building up our gardens. And one of the most wonderful resources that you might avail yourselves of in your community, most medium and larger towns and cities have master gardeners clubs. And surprisingly, even urban settings have 4-H clubs where you can call and find a local expert or take a class if you don't have the skills to do gardening yourself. But there's nothing quite as miraculous as sprouting corn seeds or bean seeds in a plastic bag in your kitchen and then taking them out and planting them somewhere in your yard or even in a pot by your front porch and watching the leaves sprout out. Kids find miracles in almost everything outdoors. And I mean, that's part of what is so important about being outside. Those types of experiences, finding a butterfly on the flower that you planted, helps children's spirituality development. Those imponderables that might be challenging for some families to talk about, being connected with nature gives children a chance to feel that connectedness to the really larger spiritual world.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on the value of outdoor play in young children's development.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Julia Berry about the importance of outdoor play in young children's development. My Boston area grandchildren live in the city, in Cambridge, and they have a garden. It all started with huge flower pots at the end of the driveway. This year, there's a huge trough is the only thing I can compare it to that you would feed animals their food, but it's planted and it has corn and tomatoes and all kinds of things growing. And there's not much yard there, but there's still plant. And the kids could show me exactly what everything was, because I was just there visiting, and that this is a different kind of tomatoes than Daddy grew last year. Last year he grew, and they know the names and all this. I, of course, don't. But I have a lot to learn from a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old.
And I bet they could describe whether they were yellow or red or oval. Or, I mean, that goes back to that noticing. I mean, children give import to those small details. We've had a lot of fun doing straw bale gardening on our playground. Our campus is sandwiched between two busy streets right here in D.C. We're fortunate enough to have a lot of property, but it's on a hill. So my environmental science teacher got 2 dozen bales of straw, and we soaked them in water. and we've got them placed around the edges of the playground where kids don't play, but they're in good sun, and you just poke a hole in the top of the straw bale after it's sort of aged a little bit on the playground, and you can put lettuce or beets or really anything. We have huge herb plants growing right out of these bales of straw. We pick peas. After the kids left school last year, I foraged on our playground for salad almost every single day. I fed myself on our playground garden. We have a pizza garden. It's got peppers and tomatoes and oregano and things that you would, you know, put on a pizza. We have a salsa garden. And very often for snack, the kids will go out to their little plot, which is a straw bale, and pick some lettuce leaves and then go get some herbs, and they make lettuce wraps and have them for snack. So really, you can do a lot of urban gardening with not much land or skill. How many kids do you know eat lettuce voluntarily?
It's interesting. You're talking in one sense about cause and effect as well. The kids are, it sounds like from the outdoors, they're learning what happens in their certain natural laws. And if you plant something and you don't water it, it doesn't grow. Or if it rains, it helps the seeds, whatever.
There's also the physics component to it. You know, children who don't ever roll a ball down a slide or ever roll themselves down a hill don't experience the sensation of gravity quite as fully as kids who've had an opportunity to do all those things.
Which is different than seeing it on a screen, isn't it?
Completely different, completely different.
And why is that?
Kids learn with their bodies, they learn with their muscles, and what they don't physically experience doesn't really remain resident with them in a way that they could go back and retrieve it and understand things.
And that's the chemical wiring?
Well, it's the whole wiring of the nervous system and connecting the brain to different experiences and then connecting those experiences to language. And being outside gives you a whole new vocabulary of things to talk about and to observe. I think play and noticing and being a good observer and being a good experimenter and having the opportunity to take risks makes you a better artist. It makes you a better writer. It makes you a better storyteller. It makes you a better physicist and a mathematician. I mean, all of the skills that are important to play, and particularly play outdoors, are skills that give children a lifetime of memories and ideas and thoughts and skills that they can use in their work and in their personal satisfaction.
What's the importance of other children in the youngsters' outdoor play experiences?
Well, it depends. I was kind of a loner child. I was a bug collector and a snake collector from early on, and my preferred MO was to go outside with my bucket and my glass jar. Ah, you ever know any children who have glass jars anymore? With the holes poked in the lid to collect things. And what I really loved best was to be outside by myself. And it may have started when my grandfather sent me out with a salt shaker because he told me, you know, if you can put salt on a bird's tail, you can catch it. I was probably 40 before I figured out that he was really just trying to get me out of the house. I didn't care if I had other children because I had nature. Nature was my friend and companion and the most interesting thing that was that part of my life. Now, outdoor play is a great democracy, too. When you play at a playground or if you're playing outdoors, it's not yours, it's not mine, it's ours. It's a collective experience. Children can't argue about whose sand it is or whose pebbles they are, who owns the sticks. They share more naturally. There's less territoriality so that their play can really be about the drama that they're developing. And if you're in a really interesting environment, whether it's the back lot with cool alleys and places to hide, or you're in the forest with trees and places where you can build a fort, it lends itself to great imaginative scenarios. And again, that storytelling, that ability to take on different roles and be a leader or be a follower and just be different than the little person that you are.
Well, we could talk about this a lot longer, but unfortunately we have to close. And before we do, what resources would you recommend for further information on this subject?
The Audubon Society, if your community has an Audubon campus or an Audubon Society phone number, they often offer fabulous nature classes. Here in Washington, we have a wonderful 40-acre facility up north. They can get you started in bird watching. I mean, that's something that people can do from their backyard. The National Wildlife Federation, again, is a great national resource. If your child is particularly interested in nature, you can work to make your backyard, no matter the size, into a national wildlife refuge and get a little placard. Our campus has recently been designated as a National Wildlife Federation site. The monarch butterfly people have a wonderful national organization to help support butterflies. And again, you can put in a butterfly garden. 4-H is in many communities. YMCA often offers nature experiences where you can go and go to your library and certainly go online and look for community resources. I loved fishing when I was a kid. So there are lots of, if you're near the water, you might look into local resources for fishing. And certainly scouting. If your child is of school age, starting in about kindergarten, you can get into the Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts. They'll provide you with lots of avenues to get started being outdoors.
And some of these organizations that you mentioned also have magazines for children. I'm thinking of the National Wildlife Federation, for example, but several of them.
Ranger Rick, do. National Geographic is certainly a great way to get older kids excited about thinking about exotic outdoor spaces.
Well, this has been a wonderful and refreshing conversation. It makes us all want to go outside, but we really appreciate all the information and the suggestions that you had. So, Julia Berry, thank you so much for being with us today and talking about the importance of outdoor play experiences for children.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Our gift for our first caller is the book Growing an In-Sync Child by Carol Kranowitz and Joy Newman. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell everything you can. That's a big help to us. Mention show number 441 and tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. Our sound engineer is Clayton Turner. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.